Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show. Episode 355 of the Roguecast, recorded November 9th, 2021. Missile Command to the deck. All right, so this week's a little bit of a weird week. As you may or may not have heard, there was a ransomware attack on Diamond Alliance, the two biggest suppliers of comics and games in North America.
Yep.
And as a result, we do not have our comics from Diamond this week. However, because of all the crazy chaos that came during the pandemic, we have two other suppliers for comics.
Yep.
And as a result, we have all of our DC and Marvel for this week.
Which is a big chunk of the overall week.
Yeah. We don't have everything. There's some Image books we won't get to talk about this week, but we do have some Marvel and DC to talk about, so we will have some comic stock.
Yeah, not a lot. Pardon a few limitations. There are ransomware hacker a-holes out there.
Yes.
Messing with stuff.
It's probably Boris from GoldenEye.
Yeah, that seems like the kind of guy flipping his little pen around.
I was going to say, where's a pen that has a little thing? I can't make the sound.
How old is this reference? 30 years?
And GoldenEye...
Russell, you've seen GoldenEye.
It can't be 30 years old, can it?
I think so. It was like mid-90s.
It was mid-90s. It could be 30 years old. Anyway, there was this movie. Alan Cumming played a Russian hacker named Boris.
Yes.
Jesus Christ, that was 1995.
Okay, so it's not quite 30 years. 26.
Yep. I mean, still, 26 years.
26 years, yeah. Anyway, we suspect it was Boris from GoldenEye, or possibly Alan Cumming himself.
I'm invincible.
I'm just going to say that was just one Bond ago.
Yeah.
Because at least, you know, Daniel Craig and then Pierce Brosnan was Bond for a long time.
Yes, that's true. That's how we measure time.
By
increments of Bond.
For the past, what, 60 years? That's been kind of
the thing.
He plummeted
100 odd jobs to his death.
We will remember the years of Roger Moore.
Just real quick, who's your Bond, Nick?
Roger Moore.
Who's your Bond, Randy?
Sean Connery, but I grew up with Roger Moore.
Okay, but you'll pick. You get some agency.
What about you,
Timothy Dalton?
What? You go License to Kill?
Yeah, that's right. Hey, you know it's not Lazenby only got one. It's quite liked amongst the sort of segments of fandom.
I'm just saying, Dave, that's a hipster choice.
I accept.
No, the hipster choice would have been Lazenby.
He only got one movie.
Yeah,
but
That's Father's favorite, I assume.
I probably so. No, he likes Connery. He likes Connery.
Connery's the original. He's the OG.
I will say, though,
Or the OB.
Well, I will say, I grew up with Roger Moore and watching a lot of those on VHS. Pierce Brosnan is the one I came in and like saw theater movies and stuff.
And he had a pretty long run, although I feel like the last three of them were all kind of weird.
Brosnan was good casting, but his were really some of the worst written.
I'm just saying, Tomorrow Never Dies with Michelle Yeoh.
I like Tomorrow.
And,
that's actually probably my favorite of them.
What's his as the news conglomerate, Evil Man? Zartan.
It's Evil Ted Turner.
The Sparrow.
Jonathan Price.
Yes, Mr. Darkroom.
Turning it to 11 is pretty amazing.
Yes, he's another prescient villain with the Ted Turner. He's like a Ted Turner, but like more... who's the Rupert Murdoch?
So what's,
he's a Rupert Murdoch scumbag.
What's dumber? Moonraker, all of it.
Yeah.
Never Say Never's a video game to the death thing. or the invisible car and the laser shooting the ice in Tomorrow Never Dies? No. What is that?
Oh, no, that was World Is Not Enough.
World Is Not Enough. Which is dumber?
I'm going to have to say probably Moonraker.
It's probably Moonraker. However,
Moonraker straight up had space battles.
The video game to the death is pretty bad.
Yeah.
So for all that the invisible car is really dumb,
yeah.
It's not the worst that Bond has been.
That did show us a cool ice hotel.
And
that was kind of fun.
Bond once did sit down with a villain at a wooden cabinet video game and battle in what was essentially Missile Command.
Yes. Missile Command of the Death.
You make 40 Bond movies. You have to kind of invent.
I want an SNL sketch where he's like there was a point where he's challenged to Pogs,
Street Fighter,
to Street Fighter, that he gets into World of Warcraft.
I see you play Blanca, Mr. Bond.
I like to think that he's like, you're challenged to a Pog duel, and Bond just pulls out a pack. He's like, I have my Pogs ready.
Here's my slammer.
Q prepared a special slammer. And then James Pog. There's a very introspective Bond who plays Sudoku.
Yes.
By the way, the
and
reason
a hip Fortnite Bond.
Yes. Like, Bond, should you really be playing with all those kids? It's kind of weird.
Bond, stop flossing. You don't like it.
Kill the noobs.
Q has installed a few dance moves all my own.
It's a Justin Timberlake Bond.
The reason I picked Dalton is because, although I grew up with Roger Moore as well,
yep.
Like, I think For Your Eyes Only was sort of my first Bond
yep.
that was that I might have seen at the theater. There is something special to coming in on a new one. And Dalton, the vibe that people described it was, oh, this is back to the grittier early days of Connery. And it was. Mm-hmm. There's still campy stuff in him, but that was the kind of the overall tenor, and I liked it. Plus, it had a song from Aha, which remains one of my favorite Bond intros.
It's true.
See, Timothy Dalton was the bad guy for me, and also in Flash Gordon.
Wait. Duran. It was not Aha. It was Duran.
It was Duran.
No. Duran Duran is A View to a Kill, dumbasses. That was Roger Moore.
What did you say?
Aha. Uh-huh.
But what was the movie?
Living Daylights.
Oh, you're right. I was thinking...
I don't know.
I misheard which movie you're talking about.
I was
about,
thinking
so.
View to a Kill.
Yeah, View to a Kill I have not returned to in ages, but it does have Christopher Walken as the villain.
Because you said... Wait, you were talking about... Yeah,
I might have accidentally said View to a Kill. I don't know.
I thought you were talking about the View to a Kill.
But there's only two movie. Dalton movies, and it's...
only two?
Living Daylights... Yeah. Where he that had like Afghanistan and all of that stuff and the big chase at the end
yep.
and the Russian defector guy
yep.
and then there was License to Kill where it's a revenge story against a drug dealer because it was the 80s
yep.
because Felix Leiter got chewed on by a shark
yeah.
yep. Dalton for me was Rocketeer and
he's great in the Rocketeer.
Flash Gordon.
Yeah, and that's literally just an age difference. You came up when he was starting to play baddies.
But also Flash Gordon.
He's a good guy in Flash Gordon.
He's a good guy spaceman.
But I thought you were saying he was a baddie.
No, he is, just in Rocketeer.
He's a little bit of a baddie at first in Flash Gordon.
And isn't he the bad guy in Hot Fuzz?
Yes.
Yeah.
He gets this.
We might have segued a little bit there.
What are we talking about?
I have no idea.
We are now talking about the oeuvre that is Timothy Dalton.
The point being, we didn't have a lot of content this week, so we can kind of go on a 10-minute tirade about James Bond.
Yeah.
And we're gonna. But we also have a bunch of topics we haven't covered, some movies, some TV, so we'll be getting to that. But before we get to all of that...
We got a few little notes.
We do a few little notes. First of all, game-wise in the store this week, we've got Vault of Magic, which is the new Kobold Press... D&D 5e compatible thing. It is their magic item book. It is super cool. It's got all kinds of magic items. It's a full book of magic items for D&D.
Yep, and it has the production values that Kobold Press is known for, which is to say it might as well be a Wizards of the Coast level production.
And by the way, I think like Gail Simone designed some magic items for it. Like they got some celebrity D&D players.
That's
too.
Very cool.
Also, probably worth mentioning, a couple weeks back, we restocked all of Kobold. So we've got their tome of, their deep magic. We've got their monster manuals, the tome of beasts.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Like
there is a whole shelf given over to them back near the D&D section.
Yep.
So
if you are needing some more D&D stuff, or you're doing early Christmas shopping for your D&D fans. They may have all the D&D books, but I bet they don't have the Kobold stuff, and more monster books are always good.
It's true. They're, and, you know, at least on the surface, they're primarily known as, you know, high production value, but, like, monsters and stories that kind of haven't been seen in D&D before. So you
right.
can throw some stuff at your players, and they're going to be like, what is that?
Right,
I don't know how to beat that.
Like the Gorillapede.
Is that a real thing?
That's a real thing.
Okay, some of them are crazy, but they're not quite that crazy.
They're not all crazy, but that one's delightful.
Is it just a giant gorilla that has the body of a millipede?
It is a gorilla of multiple legs, yes.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
What do you mean, just a giant gorilla that has the body of
Look,
a millipede?
Look, are you telling me that is weirder than an Atyug? Or an owlbear?
Or a Neo-Atyug?
Or a Neo-Atyug?
What else do we have?
And also, there's a local guys came in, dropped off a card game called Mulligan. Which is a golf-themed
right.
card game. You use little cards for your different clubs, and you like have to try and hit the... And there's, you like change the numbers. It is a cool little game. If you're looking for something for your dad, or your uncle, or your friend who plays golf, it's a cool little card game you can get, and it is locally produced. So
nice.
And it looks pretty nice. So we have that on the shelf as well. Last reminder, that in theory... We have a pre-release for the Innistrad Crimson Vow, the vampire set, on Friday. because of the crazy hackers, it is entirely possible the magic set will not get to us on time. We'll keep people informed on that. But so we should have a pre-release. Also, we decided we're doing our Black Friday sale again this year.
Yes.
I don't know if people may remember, but the pandemic year was rough, and we did not feel confident enough to implement it last year.
We weren't sure we were going to make it.
Yeah.
But despite the fact that we've lost discount from every single one of our distributors this year,
yes,
we've had a lot of support, and we are doing pretty well. So we are going to do a Black Friday sale again as a sort of a thank you to all our customers. Basically, you come in, you spend $25. For every $25 you spend, you get $5 in gift certificates that you can then spend the next day if you want to.
Yep.
Or you can give them as gifts, or you can use them for yourself.
Yeah, it's definitely a popular thing to get some gift certificates, you know, to hand out to friends and family. Yeah. Also, like you say, Randy, popular to return and get more cool shit.
Yep, yeah. Well, there's a good day to buy, like, some of those box sets or, you know, stuff that's been on your wish list that you're like, oh, it's so expensive, but...
Right, Hellboy box set or Twilight Imperium or whatever.
I'm just saying, buy all your Christmas gifts from us, then you get a gift certificate to come and spend on yourself.
It's true. News.
Yeah.
Not a lot. There's not a lot. There is one thing that is very specific to our group, which is that there's apparently a Midnight Run sequel in the works from, I want to say Universal? Yeah. That has Robert De Niro as its producer.
Right.
Yep. So for those who don't know, Midnight Run, 1988 action movie, which makes it 40 years old now?
Whatever.
No, 35. little less than 35 years old.
Same director as Beverly Hills Cop.
Yep.
And kind of vibing that way, which is to say a lot of funny stuff, but when it's serious, it takes its action and its characters and its threats seriously.
Starring De Niro in one of his first comedic roles, honestly.
Yeah. And one of the all-time great mismatched buddy comedies that hate each other at first.
Paired with Charles Grodin.
With Charles Grodin.
Yep.
I know that in casting it, by the way, there were other possibilities for both those characters.
Yeah.
They came up with the right ones. And Grodin is maybe especially... No, they're both as important to the formula.
Okay. So it was really good. They did some TV movies that were not great that didn't have Grodin or De Niro.
Everybody should go check out the original.
But the original is definitely worth a watch. So they are doing a new one in development. It's got Regina Hall from Girls Trip and Scary Movie.
Okay.
She's good.
And then it's unclear like who she's playing or who else would be in it or if De Niro's going to play Jack Walsh again.
This could be a rethink or it could be a sequel?
Well, they're saying sequel.
Okay.
The plot and additional cast members are under wraps right now.
Randy, is there any chance she's Alonzo Mosley's...
That would be amazing.
...kid or
grandkid? That would be fantastic.
Grandkid.
Grandkid, yeah.
Yeah. Because that was Yaphet Kotto, right?
Yaphet Kotto.
Yaphet Kotto has a great sort of secondary antagonist role in it.
FBI agent Alonzo Mosley.
Yeah. He truly kills it. And shows us the meaning of the word deadpan.
So it's being written by Aisha Carr, who worked on Woke and Brooklyn Nine-Nine, both of which are very good.
Okay.
And very funny. And Brooklyn Nine-Nine is actually exactly what I'd want. That mix of comedy and action, like that's the person I want writing it.
Although Brooklyn Nine-Nine is not is a little a slightly different vibe. From...
It is, but someone who does Brooklyn Nine-Nine, I would trust them to do.
Yeah, I mean the bones are there.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's different, but it would work.
Also, I wouldn't assume that a Brooklyn Nine-Nine writer would be exactly duplicating that formula anyway.
No, I'm just saying, if you can write that, you can probably write a Midnight Run sequel.
Right.
De Niro's the only one who's left. Like Grodin died, and Yaphet Kotto died, and so, De Niro's the only one left to sort of reprise his role, I think. No, the guy who played the bounty hunter, he's still around.
Joe Pantaleone's still around.
Joe Pantaleone's still around.
Is that guy still around?
Yeah.
Marvin?
Yeah, Marvin.
John Ashton. Yep.
John Ashton, but I think he's retired.
Probably so.
But he could theoretically show up again. Anyway, there's nothing to this. It's in development. It could never happen. But because Midnight Run is such a thing, we actually even have a store code phrase we use that is related to Midnight Run. It is... It is a beloved movie of ours, and I thought it was interesting that maybe they would do another one.
Yeah.
I don't think any of us have anything like, no, don't touch it, it's sacred, because it is. But I'm like, no, you can try and make a sequel. It won't diminish the original for me.
Honestly, just as many people will ignore it as ignore it now.
Yes.
and if anything, it might draw some attention to it, even if it ends up being no good.
Yeah.
People will be like, oh, but they say the original was good, and... And approximately 50 people will stream it.
Yes.
And hey, that's 50 of the people that wouldn't have streamed it otherwise.
The other bit is that Taika Waititi is talking about adapting The Incall, which is a famous Mobius story. Is maybe the most famous Mobius story.
And just in case you don't know who Mobius is, he was like France or Belgium.
Belgium.
Europe lands.
Europe lands.
most sort of maybe influential and prominent comic book artist.
If you've seen Fifth Element, that is very Mobius-like.
Yes. Yeah, I believe he did contribute among the people.
Did he?
I think he actually did.
Okay.
Yeah, I think, like, you know, some of those taxi cabs and other things.
Yeah.
I know there were a lot of artists from various, you know, European graphic novels contributing, but I think he actually may have done some work on it.
But this is sort of big, epic sci-fi. I think the lead character is called John Fool.
Okay.
And
if you Google it, you'll see some pretty amazing artwork.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never read this one. I only know Mobius from the Silver Surfer stuff.
Yep.
Yep. The interesting thing is Taika Waititi, but...
Yeah.
I think he's signed on to develop, like, 8 different things now.
Right.
So I don't know if this is more
He's, like, doing Akira. He's doing... Yeah.
But if anyone were to do it, he's the one I'd want to adapt it.
I you know, the big European sci-fi things I haven't been, like, super drawn in by. What was the other one from Humanoid Franny from some years ago? The Metabarons.
Metabarons, yeah.
And that one to me was a snoozer, kind of like a more violent and realistically painted Kirby's Fourth World kind of thing.
Yeah, I get that.
But, like, I found, like, it didn't have the verve and fun of Kirby's Fourth World either.
Hmm.
But I don't know The Incall, so maybe this will turn me around.
Yeah, well, I would like a Fifth Element style sci-fi by Taika Waititi. That all sounds potentially interesting.
Yeah, it does.
But yeah, I also don't have a huge love for European comics in general.
Take that, Europe.
Yeah. All right. That is actually all our news for the week, and a long digression about James Bond. We're going to take a second and come back and talk about comics for the week. We are talking comics for the week of Wednesday, November 10th, and y'all are working on your best of 2021 list, right?
Yes. Yes.
No, I, you know, just compile it in the last, like, week of the year. Just, I'm not as crazy with lists. Although I did make a list of every movie and TV show hitting this month for some weird reason.
Yeah, I know. That was like me.
I know. I was like, I'm channeling my inner Randy.
Yes. Yeah, we, as always, we are a spectrum. One of us, one of them. On one end, you have me, meticulously cataloging every comic I read and ranking them throughout the year, so that at the end of the year, all I have to do is, like, pull up all that info, and I've got the list.
Yeah.
In the middle, you've got Nick, who, a couple weeks before we do the show, we put together a list of things. And on the other side, you've got Dave.
The last list I made was a list of the hairiest superheroes about 20 years ago at the store.
And that was an also list. Dave, your preparation will be going around the store that day. No, like, what did I like?
I actually do, I do a little bit of advance work on
that
one.
Okay, all right. Anyway, we are getting to that point of, like, I can be pretty confident about what my best of the year is.
And it's interesting, I think there's people, like, for sure it's going to be James Tynion.
Yeah.
And... The Me You Love in the Dark from Scotty Young.
Yeah. It's going to be a little easier because there was a gap of like 3 or 4 months where there were no comics.
Not this year.
No,
it was last year.
Was that last year?
It was last year.
I don't know. Years.
Yeah, that was last year. This year we've had comics the whole time. And a lot of Tom Taylor.
Yeah.
A lot of James Tynion. And I noticed that basically the stuff that was my favorites solidified early in the year. Like Nightwing became a favorite and has stayed a favorite.
Yeah.
So. It's nice that they can hold on to it.
Yeah.
Was Spider-Man Life Story last year?
At least last year. I think it was 2 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
There was a one-shot this year.
Right.
Which was very good.
Yes, it was. This week, there's not a ton of books, but like I said, we only have Marvel and DC. But
there's some good stuff in there.
There's some good stuff in there. The one that I think Dave and I both really, really dug was Robin and Batman number one, part of a 3-issue miniseries and sort of their prestige format.
But not one of the big ones. Not one of the super tall.
No, it's not like $10.
Is it Black Label?
It is not Black Label.
Oh, okay.
I thought it was, but it's not.
But it adapts the 3-issue format. Yes.
So it's the team from the Image comic, Descender. Yeah, Jeff Lemire and Dustin Nguyen.
Yep, and it is basically early days. Robin, before he gets his costume,
this is Dick Grayson.
Dick Grayson and Batman, and it's sort of about Robin becoming Robin.
In short, when this begins, he's having frustrations with training and stuff like that.
He's like, I want to be out being a sidekick, and Batman's like, no, you're not ready.
Yep. And to some degree, we have seen these kind of stories before, but Lemire kind of, like, I'm going to say, sands down the kind of the extraneous stuff and gets to the heart of the characters,
yeah,
I think.
I think so, too.
I don't like Robin and Batman, especially Dick Grayson Robin, being quite as at each other's throats as they were in this one.
Yeah,
occasionally.
They're bickering quite a bit, and I think...
But it creates an arc to follow.
Yeah, and also it did remind me a little bit of sort of the way they were in the animated series, which I liked.
Right.
But also, he writes a great Alfred.
Yep. Mm-hmm. There's some neat plot twists as to who the antagonist is going to be and why they have a connection to Robin.
That was one of the big things I really liked.
I would not have guessed it, to be honest.
Nope.
It was a cool twist.
And as always with the Nguyen's art, it is gorgeous. It's really pretty.
Yeah, Nguyen is not... he's done Batman before. What was the All Ages Batman book that he did?
It was Lil Gotham.
Lil Gotham, which was amazing. And, I mean, he just kind of knocks it out of the park on this one.
Yep. His design work on the Robin costume is particularly cool.
And also, this is pretty much from the point of view of Robin. Like we definitely get in his head a little bit more, I think. I really liked it.
I think, in general, Batman fans should check it out.
Yeah. DC also has the collection, the Batman, their Dark Designs, the first of the Pintinian Batman run.
Yep.
Finally gets a trade paperback collection. It's been hardcover for, like 2 years. But if you want to see pre-Joker War, like the very beginning of Tinian's run, now that it's about to wrap up, it is finally available in trade.
Yeah, and Tinian, this is the year that kind of Tinian seemed to kind of break out, at least on our radar, with a lot of his indie stuff, like Something is Killing the Children, or was it Nice House on the Lake?
And Department of Truth.
But he's been in the comic world for a while.
Yep, yeah. And he's been prolific on Batman for a few years now. It's just that it's been a little bit hard to find his early issues of it in collection.
He came up as a protege with, I believe, Scott Snyder.
I think he was a Snyder co-writer, yeah. There is a Thing miniseries, which is notable for being written by Walter Mosley, who wrote the
Devil with a Blue Dress.
Devil with a Blue Dress. What's that name? What's the
Easy
name?
Easy Rollins is the detective, and so it's like a series of prose detective novels, and Walter Mosley is justifiably famous in mystery subgenre circles. But apparently loves the superheroes too, and he's got a Thing story here that's, I think, from the solicit I read, meant to incorporate elements from throughout his life.
Okay.
It's definitely got a vibe that's a little retro, like you see the old, pogo plane, I think, in there. It's kind of iconic stuff, like Willie Lumpkin, the mailman of the Silver Age 60s, is there, and there's a weird mystery of this death-like being. He's like a wraith-looking thing.
Yeah.
That when the Thing kind of has a big blow-up that lands him in jail because he's being temperamental and cranky, kind of like the way early Ben Grimm stuff was sometimes.
Yep.
Hercules is in there, and there's some fun stuff in there. And I guess that's the first kind of glimpse. We also see some of the other FF, but that's Hercules is kind of our first glimpse of what may be the kind of the vibe of it all, doing callbacks to like old friends and foes and stuff of his.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if he was really there.
I was not either, but I think that was just the weird shield that they had up in there.
Yeah.
He was there because I think...
he flipped a car when he got pissed at his boyfriend.
Reed talks to him.
What's that?
Reed talks to Hercules.
Yeah.
Right, that's true.
That's what I mean. I didn't at first. I figured eventually he did, but yeah.
Can we talk about the artwork, though?
Oh, yeah.
I really like this artwork.
It's Tom Riley, which I feel like I know the name, but I have no idea.
I was trying to remember if we'd seen him from anything, but I don't remember him.
It is gorgeous. I mean, it feels like akin to... Not Dave Bullock, but who...
Darwyn Cook is the reference that
Anna mentioned.
Said, but it's not
Who are some of those Daredevil artists? Marcus Martin?
I could definitely see.
Javier Polito?
Michael Cho? Yeah.
Michael Cho, who does a lot of variant covers and stuff.
So he worked on an issue of X-Men Snapshots.
Okay.
And he's worked on some Immortal Hulk and Thor and the Morbius miniseries.
Well, he should sounds like he may be a new-ish guy.
He should do more because his panel-to-panel is great and just his aesthetic is
Yeah, this is
fantastic.
Definitely somebody I'm going to want to follow because I can see his stuff.
He also draws just a really good thing. Yeah, and kind of an emotive thing
Randy,
as well.
You specifically mentioned there's a bit where the thing shows back up. He's been off fishing where, Nick?
Yeah, he's been fishing off of the coast of South America.
Oh, that's right. And kind of seems like enjoying himself, and he's wearing his, like, what do you call this thing? Fishing waders or whatever?
Yeah.
And anyway.
It's a great design.
It's a great design.
Yeah. Also, Venom gets a new number one this week.
Yes, this is the relaunch from Al Ewing.
Al Ewing and Rom V. Yeah. With Brian Hitch on pencils doing, I think, some of the stronger work I've seen from Brian Hitch in a while.
Yeah, it's a good job. I did not know where things ended up in Venom prior to this. I knew that Null, the symbiote god, had attacked Earth. There was a big crossover. Yep. Venom helped lead the heroes against it. Early on in this, you will get the impression that that Eddie Brock is dead.
Yeah.
Because his kid is Venom.
Yep.
But Eddie Brock is not dead, and Eddie Brock is also kind of Venom. I guess I would rather let people discover it on their own, but he has kind of been elevated, Eddie, to a sort of more cosmic sort of level of playing field, where he would be more likely to run into people like from Guardians of the Galaxy, anybody from those kind of cosmic books.
Well, there's kind of two stories here going here. Dylan is basically dealing with his anger.
That's his kid.
And he is back on Earth. And Eddie has become sort of a one-man force symbiote force for good out in space. And they're like dealing with space pirates and
he's
Skrulls.
Kind of doing Green Lantern-y type stuff, honestly.
But it quickly turns into these two stories become linked. And there's some creepy future stuff going on. And Dylan's going to wind up thrust into the role of Venom. It's a good thing. It's weirdly cosmic for Venom.
Yeah, I think we all, or at least I know I had some reservations about that, but I was ended up taken by how that was executed.
Yeah.
Like, when you get inside Eddie's head and you see how he's got all these partners that he, where do they come from that have symbiotes on them? Any place in particular?
The symbiotes?
Yeah.
There's a planet of that was one of the Null was like based around.
Are they
around
just
it.
Symbiotes?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. No, there's not a person underneath there.
I get the sense there's something.
No, they're just symbiotes, and he's basically moving between them.
Right. That's the neat thing is like almost as if like something a power you might have in like a video game or something like that.
Yeah.
When he's like, if one of them gets in trouble, he will just shift his mind into that body because he's got cool symbiote powers.
Null was able to do.
Yeah,
that.
He's got godlike symbiote powers.
Eddie at this point is the king in black. I mean, he is the king.
I mean, that said, he is not godlike in a way that I think would make things boring. He still has to. He's taking down space pirates. He is, and he's having to deal with individual fights and things like that.
I mean,
he just has much better resources.
He's not doing things that are like in the Venom Space Knight. Who wrote that? Was it Remender?
That was Remender, I believe. Yes,
where it was Flash Thompson in the symbiote suit, but doing kind of space. Stuff like this that Al Ewing is putting Eddie in now. And it's an interesting idea. It's not exactly what I would expect from Venom, but it seems like a cool evolution for the character.
Mm-hmm. There's I like the interaction with his son and the weird. There's kind of a creepy sequence and a phone call while he's visiting his son. That was kind of fascinating to see.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's got my attention. It's interesting to see Venom surprise me.
Well, also, it's coming off a really well-liked run by Donny Cates.
Yeah.
And I think that sets it up. You know, some people, like, you know, after you've read a good run that ends well, you kind of like want to skip Venom.
Yep.
This feels like a good continuation and also a new take. Like, I think this is a really good first issue. I'm definitely intrigued by where it goes.
Well, you know, like, what did we have? Jason Aaron did several years on Thor that would like felt like, oh, that was so good. What could possibly top him?
And then Cates came in and did his thing.
If not top him, but, like, what could live up?
Yeah.
And Cates came in and did his thing and did it. Yeah. And so, yeah.
Speaking of people taking over and doing the new thing, the Amazing Spider-Man stuff continues to be really good. I think Nick and I are both really digging this.
Aren't there multiple authors working on this?
It seems to be a revolving two issues on, two issues off kind of thing. I know it's, Zeb Wells? No.
Zeb Wells is one of them. Kelly Thompson is the one writing this one, with Sarah Pacelli on art.
Yeah.
Oh.
And
Sarah Pacelli was one of the early Miles Morales artists, right?
Yes.
This has Ben Reilly going up against Morbius, and guest stars Black Cat.
Yeah.
As well as Misty Knight and Colleen Wing are like acting as trainers for Ben at the Beyond Corporation. And there's another guest star who I was very happy to see.
I knew you would be.
that sort of reveals a little bit about what they're doing there. And there's a big Spider-Man villain who makes an appearance at the end. So I really like this. And I like that they're doing a thing where Peter's like, he caught a big dose of radiation. And he's sort of comatose in the hospital. Yep. I don't think they're going to kill him. I'm pretty sure that this is to get him out of the way so that Ben can be Spider-Man for a while.
Right. I also think the sort of downtime in these issues... Kelly Thompson is doing it really well, because I actually think the Black Cat Mary Jane sequence is one of
the
best sequences in
it
the entire
really
book.
It was really good, yeah.
But I love seeing the Daughters of the Dragon again.
Yeah, I've not read this, but y'all are making me want to read it.
It's really good. I'm digging it.
Honestly, I wasn't really into Spencer's run. I think there were a couple of story arcs where I was like, oh, these are cool ideas, but overall...
That's where I was, too. There were bits and pieces where I liked it, but...
But these teams so far, and I like Zeb Wells. From his D&D books, and
so they make Spencer...
No, that's Jim Zub.
What has Zeb Wells done then?
Zeb Wells has done a bunch of comedy leaning stuff for Marvel.
Okay, well, maybe I'd have to go look and confirm, but I like Zeb Wells' writing, and I think Kelly Thompson is doing a really good job.
I shall investigate.
Yeah, it's been pretty good, and we have all of it.
Yeah,
It's been weekly or bi-weekly, and so we've got the last, I think, four issues that sort of start this run. It's definitely worth a look.
Yeah.
Savage Avengers gets what I think is its penultimate issue, as this weird team of like Kang, Doctor Strange, and Doctor Doom are taking on along with Conan, a Kulan Goth, the sorcerer who has basically won, and they're using time travel and magic to try and stop him before he wins, even though he's already won. It's very weird, very fun. I really love this book.
That's pretty cool.
Chip Zdarsky's Justice League: The Last Ride wraps up, which is a pretty solid finale. And the latest issue of Joker, I thought was a really good issue. I forget how much I've liked this book. The hardcover came out last week. But Tinian is now 9 issues into what is going to be a 12-issue run, and he's definitely ramping towards something. He has another villain who's sort of introduced in this bit. There's sort of competing conspiracies trying to deal with the Joker. The Joker's like the Chaos Wildcard in the middle of it.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, a great cover,
yes,
too. We talked about
cover.
This. It's got like the usual the kind of cliche of the cop's perp being pushed face down onto the trunk of the car. Only in this case, it's both Joker being pushed down and Gordon himself.
Yep.
Really, really beautifully drawn by Gillum March. I want to catch up on this book, and I'm reminded the collected edition of the first, 5-6 issues?
I think it's the first 6. I think it's the first half.
Just came out, and I may need to go ahead and pick that up.
Also, there's a new hardcover edition of Junji Ito's Cat Diary.
Yes, Yan and Mew, I think.
Yeah.
And everybody, I think, knows Junji Ito is like the manga master of horror, but as it turns out, he also once was made to learn to like cats. His I think, wife who wanted a cat... got a cat, and he was like a dog guy, and so he recounts with a lot of humor him slowly getting closer to this cat, all the while drawing it sometimes with the same style of his horror stuff to indicate his own internal anxiety about it. It's really delightful. You don't have to have read his other stuff to enjoy it, but if you have read it, this is the weirdest and funnest thing he's done.
There's also a box set for Hill House. The Joe Hill horror books. We got a box that has the four, Plunge, Basketful of Heads, Daphne Byrne, and one
Dollhouse.
And the Dollhouse Family.
Yeah.
So they're all, basically it's four self-contained horror books.
Yeah.
It's a great, this is a good box that would make a good gift for, if you've got a Stephen King fan in your life.
Yeah.
That you're like, oh, I want them to read comics. Right. This will work.
Right. It's literally curated by his son, and it showcases, I think, some top quality writing. There's, horror is difficult to do in comics sometimes, but I thought that they were doing a really good job with all of those books.
Yeah.
And they come recommended by me.
There's also a Hellboy omnibus box set if you want a big chunk of Hellboy. It's got a really nice box with art by Mike Mignola. So starting to get some of those box set collections for the holidays, mm-hmm. and worth a look. Anything else comic-wise?
No, that was everything on mine.
I think that's all the big stuff.
All right. That's it for comics. We'll be back in just a second to talk about some TV and movies. we have been saving a variety of comic or movies and TV we've been watching.
Yep.
That we're going to run through here and give you our thoughts and catch up.
Is it a lightning round of lost topics?
No, it's going to be longer than a lightning round because we're going to spend a little time on them. But before we get to the TV and movie side, Dave, why don't you tell us about Scare for a Cure this year?
Yeah, I think I've talked about this before for people who don't know. It's essentially a somewhat more interactive haunted house that they stage out in Manor, where everything is all volunteer run, and it's all generating money, I think, for breast cancer research.
Mm-hmm.
And every year there's a cool theme. Randy, you've been out at least once,
twice? I was bummed not to get to go this year.
Yeah, and like the first time that we went, and by the way, I still think that might actually have been the best time.
That was fun.
It was a post-apocalyptic compound that we end up getting captured into, where in this future, not only are there zombies, but there's sort of like mutants that have grown that are like intelligent zombies, and we're essentially captured by them, and the adventure goes from there. There's little surprise twists and turns. At one point, I became separated from the group and was strapped to a dental chair to be tortured to death by a zombie until y'all arrived and saved me. It kind of has it is not like big budget, but they've stretched their resources really well. And they do a lot of neat things. Even their warm-up where they just kind of make sure... Because you actually have to be a little bit, not fit for this, but you're going to have to crawl... You might have to climb just a little bit, like, up over, like, some waist-height thing. Really pretty easy stuff. I used to think it sounded, like, scary, but you're not going to have to do anything super crazy at all. And, but when they're preparing you, do you remember this, Randy? Like, when we went, it was as if they were like, welcome to, you know, camp such and such. It's like, you guys, you're lucky we're taking you in, but we're going to put you through your paces and make sure you can contribute.
Yeah.
And so they kind of role play the little minor training sequence while you're waiting to go in, so that, you know, it makes it feel like you are actually at a zombie camp. Then another year they did like a scary underground one where there was like, it's like almost Indiana Jones-ish stuff in a haunted mines and stuff.
Yeah.
And this year it was a out of control high tech prison.
Yeah.
And a bunch of great stuff happened in it. We were supposed to be guests who were there to inspect to see if there were any like civilian inspectors to see if the prisoners' claims of mistreatment were possibly true.
And were they?
And they were. In fact, we found out that their supposed state-of-the-art computerized system had been hacked by a villainous guy named Mercer. By the way, I should say these are all a little tongue-in-cheek as delivered. Yeah. Not like goofy, but a little tongue-in-cheek. And that, like, among other things... the prisoners had not been fed for 2 weeks and had resorted to cannibalism.
Yeah.
And so that was the first thing we discovered is prisoners eating each other and eating guards. The thing that I have not mentioned is that you are supposed to get bloody in this. They have lots of things that spray blood, cannon blood at you, sometimes other gore and slime.
The phrase used by my friend who volunteers was gore cannons.
Yes.
So I will say, though, you posted a picture, and you did not seem as bloody as you usually do.
I did not get face blasted this time. However, like last year, when I had to ride home pantsless because my pants were soaked in blood...
Not the first time.
My pants were soaked in blood again. However, this year, actually, I brought a change of clothes, and in the darkness of the parking lot, I quick changed into those clothes. Also had blankets over the seats to wash. It's all stuff that washes out, for the record, but it might take a wash or two to make happen.
And it might not wash out if, say, your $10 bill in your wallet got soaked full of...
Oh, yes. My wallet, I took out my faded paper wallet that had a... had Batwoman on it from the DC... What do they call those?
Bombshells
line. Yeah. I did love that wallet, but it became soaked in fake blood, and the two $10 bills I had in it were also soaked in fake blood. I decided to donate them to the cause, and they were very entertained when I gave it to them.
I feel like you should have gone through like a drive-thru or something and been like...
was definitely considered. But anyway, there's the storyline that also developed in this one. Like, there was computer stuff out of control. Every time we ran into a guard who would sometimes tell us, oh, you need to get this key card to get past this door or whatever. Also, this thing was built on a nuclear reactor, as it turns out, and we had to stop a meltdown. The guards would have, like, knives just sticking out of their chest and be like, not doing so good and stuff like that. A lot of really understated kind of hilarious responses. Or they'd have like a limb ripped off or something like that.
Yeah.
And I would be like slightly role playing, but also kind of goofy. I'd be like, this is definitely going in my report and stuff. Near the end, we were supposed to meet the warden at the end. And indeed, we met the warden because he had become the victim of his own electric chair. His body was there, and when I went to get the key card off of him, smoke billowed from his charred corpse at me. But that wasn't enough to open the door. It needed a retinal scan, and this was like, it was like, you know, mock-up skull thing like that with a single eye in it, and so somebody else in our group had to go pluck the eye from the corpse to use in the eye reader.
That's fantastic.
Ultimately, we did face off against Mercer. Everybody, there was a timer going off that was supposedly the prison was going to blow up in like about a minute. And everybody was like, put the key in, stop the thing. But he's like kind of doing crazy Charles Manson-ish rants. And I'm like, man, Mercer's starting to make sense. I'm like, I want to hear what he has to say. So I waited until it was about down to 20 seconds before I did it. And my whole party was going, having a fit.
So you keep saying Mercer, and I'm like, you're going after the Sergeant Slaughter.
Renegade.
Renegade.
Anyway, it was another really fun year. If you go out there, they also have like a little pub where you can get some beer, get a burger, solid pub food kind of stuff. But also the kind of place where the lunchroom looking ladies who are running it will go and take their smoke break on the bench right next to you because it's a little more rough out there.
Well, and it's all volunteer.
And in fact, you watch a video before it begins. You can go in generally, by the way, in groups of about six. The video really encourages you to play along. They're like, it is going to be so much more fun if you're not like, that's fake or whatever. Yeah. Like, if you kind of throw yourself into it, it's a blast. They also do a thing in spring called Quest Night, which is kind of a series of quests that it's more like a LARPing kind of stuff, a little bit of live D&D thing. And I've gone to that once and had a lot of fun too. So I'm gonna always probably recommend these guys. It is a experience like no other. You may have been to a haunted house, but it's not quite like this.
No, it's different.
Anyway, yeah, very very fun.
I have a friend of mine runs a thing every year called CheapCon.
Yeah.
Where basically he does indie RPGs and board games at his place. Because of the pandemic, it is all over Zoom this year. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't get a chance to play much of it, but I did play a game called For the Queen, which you can run on D20, but we have it in the store, and I now own it. It's a little card game, and it's a story game. So basically you get, there's an image, I want to say it's about a dozen cards. There's 14 cards of different queens, which are everything from sort of a traditional Margaret, or Queen Elizabeth-looking queen, to more like fantasy queens, to a couple sort of more like Indian, to a couple looking sort of demonic.
Yeah.
And you choose one of them as sort of your evocative queen.
Yep.
And then the group up to six people, you play prompts that ask things like, you fell for the queen, what is it about you that made you love her? Or, you disappointed the queen, what happened when you did that?
Right.
And sort of you develop a story by following this, and after you answer the question, the other players can ask clarification questions like, oh, well, what did happen then? Or, you know, well, does that mean you're this? And
right.
So you can sort of do a storytelling. It plays pretty quickly. I want to say it was less than an hour.
It sounds like a sort of like an improv game, but with the goal of not just a quick improv scene, but of telling like building a narrative, a story.
Yeah.
Is there a definitive ending sort of thing?
About the midway through the deck, you will run into a card that says, the queen is attacked. Do you defend her? And that is the end of the game. And based on what you've gone before, it's whether or not you will defend the queen. And then you can go around.
So she could be like a brutal and calculating queen.
In the version we played, she was basically like an evil vampire type queen.
Ew.
Yeah.
And I guess you could have been a loyalist to her, or you could be a brave soul who had to serve under her, but might not defend her.
Well, all of us were deeply in her thrall.
Yeah.
And my character was the only one I decided did not defend her, because he was the supplies manager who she treated like crap, and so he didn't defend her, and everyone else did, and I'm like, yeah, that didn't work out great for me. I feel like I probably got killed. But it's super fun, and if you have friends who are open to sort of like the lighter RP stuff, Yeah, that's really worth a play.
A narrative structure card game sounds really cool.
Yeah. There's a new movie on Netflix from a director / rapper named The Bullets.
Yes.
Jamie something? I forget his name.
Yes. Let's see if I can...
The movie is called Harder They Fall, and it is a Western focusing on black cowboys and cowgirls, all of whom are real characters.
James Samuel.
But kind of heightened versions,
it's,
right?
And it is a fictional story using these characters. So, he's got, you know, I think most people probably have heard of Bass Reeves, the black marshal who Lone Ranger was famously based upon.
Yeah.
Who's played by Delroy Lindo in this.
Mm-hmm.
But also Nat Love, who was a gangster at a gang, and he is played by Jonathan Majors, yep. a.k.a. Kang, a.k.a. the lead of Lovecraft Country.
Yep.
And he is opposed by Joe Buck. Joe Buck? No.
Rufus Buck.
Rufus Buck.
That's Joe Buck Idris Elba, right?
Joe Buck is a sportscaster.
Yes.
Rufus Buck is Idris Elba, and he has a gang as well. He's got Cherokee Bill, a fast draw guy who is played by Lakeith Stanfield.
And Trudy Smith, who is portrayed by Regina King.
Regina King. And on the other side of it, we've got Stagecoach Mary, who is played by Zazie Beetz.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it's a couple other guys in the Nat Love's gang, basically. But what happens is that the opening scene involves Nat Love as a kid. Rufus Buck comes in and basically kills his parents and scars him.
Yeah.
And then it jumps to Jonathan Majors basically going after Rufus Buck because he is an older guy who killed his parents.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all about Bass Reeves and the Love gang up against the Buck's gang. And I really love this. It's very stylized. It's very Tarantino-esque.
Yeah, I mean, you can't escape the Tarantino, comparison just because... I mean, Lawrence Bender actually produced this.
Oh, did he? Okay.
So, probably most notably to something like Django.
Yeah, yeah.
But this has elements of, like, Kill Bill, and that opening scene felt very kind of like a...
That was like a Sergio Leone kind of thing.
Yeah, it felt like an Inglourious Basterds opening where it was a little bit of a tense thing.
But it also feels like ensemble westerns like Tombstone and Silverado to me.
Yes, there's the Tombstone comparison. The story is very, like, we've seen this western before.
Sure. Yeah.
It's very prototypical. The style is what sets it apart, and I love the music.
The soundtrack's amazing.
The music is great.
Is it one of those that it uses contemporary music,
yes.
right?
Yeah. I will say some of the performances are really, really good.
Yeah.
I actually thought Lakeith Stanfield was the standout.
He's always good.
He is becoming that very kind of stalwart. You know what you're going to get with him.
Yeah.
Jonathan Majors, he can chew scenery like no other
Jonathan
as
Majors
well.
Jonathan Majors is great to lead. And Idris Elba plays it kind of quiet. He's only in a few scenes.
I will say, I was a little sad that we did not get to see him flex a little bit. Because I felt like... I knew what they were going for as kind of the stoic kind of bad guy in quotation marks.
He did not recreate his Fast and Furious.
No, he did not. I wanted him to break out a little bit.
At no point does he say, I'm Black Superman.
Because the opening sort of train breakout scene with him was really good.
I thought it was really good.
And I was expecting a little bit more from that character. I will say it's a bit long in the tooth. It's at like 2 hours and 37 minutes.
See, it's interesting.
I
did not feel like it was long at all. I was engaged throughout. I loved this. This might be my favorite thing I've seen all year.
I think we might be on the spectrum here.
Yeah. you were like, you liked it, but
I did. I had some problems.
I couldn't get into it.
Dave got 20 minutes in and gave up.
I was like, this is not Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
It is not Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
I just couldn't plug into it. I might give another try another time. We shall see.
But I highly recommend it if you like westerns, if you like sort of stylized westerns. I would definitely give this a look. I really enjoy
it. This director did one other movie before,
he
right?
He did, but it's impossible to find, and it's got really rough ratings on IMDb.
Yeah.
But yes, it's the previous one he did was also a western.
But I will say,
it's got Rosario Dawson and a few other people in it.
I think his style is... This is, like, from, like, a very beginning director. You could see kind of
Well, he's a musician.
Yeah.
Like this is some.
But
early
he's
stuff
transitioning there. A little bit. And
yeah.
He's got a point of view that works, and I think he's only going to get better.
Yeah, I dug this. I definitely recommend it. Also on Netflix, Nick, you watched Army of Thieves.
Yes. Grown. This is from the Zack Snyder universe, from Army of the Dead.
Yep.
This is a prequel. I will say, Randy, you might actually be into this because...
I saw the trailer last night. It's one of those things where I'm like, I could maybe watch this, but it didn't quite hook me.
Yeah, I mean, it is basically a heist movie.
Yep.
If I'm not mistaken... It took one of the popular characters from the
Safecracker, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and showed him pre-zombie.
Yeah, basically, it's at the time the zombie outbreak is happening in Las Vegas, where it initially broke out.
Right, that's where that movie takes place.
Yes, and there are some references to some of the characters that are like in Army of the Dead.
Yeah.
But this is all about him sort of completing a safe-cracking trio of the quintessential best safes created years and years ago by a famous safe person,
mm-hmm.
Safe maker.
Are there famous safe makers?
I'm sure there are. This is all based on sort of like Norse mythology.
Wait, what?
Yeah, it's... I forget exactly the name of it, but it's a trio of safes that he has to crack... but he gets sort of, like, put into it by, like, this gang of thieves who are wanting the money in those saves.
Mm-hmm.
The other main character is one of the women from Fast and the Furious. She is the hacker. Why can I not remember?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, also Ramsay's.
Yeah, yeah, Ramsay's. Right.
And
yeah.
Known for being also on Game of Thrones.
But I will say that the safecracker, he actually is the director of the film as well. And he has a good eye. He also has a really good handle of humor.
Hmm.
His character is very kind of like geekish and not super self-conscious and not like a thief. He is very much like, why am I here? What am I doing? Oh my God, you have a gun. And seeing him kind of those roots before we get to Army of the Dead was really a fun kind of callback because he is definitely more sure of himself, even though he is still a geek in
right.
Army of the Dead. Of course, when you're thrown against like people like Dave Bautista and stuff, it kind of... but I thought this had a lot of charm and a lot of heart, and I think that went a long way to sort of endear the character to me.
I always think about Zack Snyder movies and think, a lot of charm, a lot of heart. I know he didn't direct it.
No, but...
But that might be a good thing that this other writer who... did he write it?
Zack Snyder had a hand in writing some of the story, I think. Or at least I know he produced it. Whether
again,
or not.
If nothing else, the way it was, the manner in which it directed, if it had heart, that's a little bit at odds with most of his movies.
That
and maybe
true.
That is an interesting addition to the Snyderverse.
I think Zack Snyder thinks his movies have heart.
Yeah.
I'm not sure he
sometimes
does.
Sometimes Doomsday gets stabbed through the heart by a giant steel rod by Superman. So there's heart in that sense.
His movies have neither heart nor brains. Lots of balls.
Yeah, balls.
I feel like he tried to do something with Sucker Punch, just he doesn't have the like ability to do.
Yes.
Weirdly, I will still say that I think the Dawn of the Dead remake that he did in 2004 actually does have some heart.
Yeah, it does.
In places.
Whether or not that's...
It doesn't really end with any heart, but along the way.
Its heart gets eaten out.
Yes.
Well, to complete the trifecta of movies that would not fit in a film festival together...
Yes.
You guys both... Nick finally saw Green Knight.
I did.
And you have both determined that I'm going to hate it, so I'm probably not going to watch it. So feel free to spoil away.
Yeah, I really don't think Randy... This is a movie not built for Randy.
I thought the trailer looked good. I was considering seeing it, but you guys are both so sure I'm going to hate it that I'm probably not going to watch it.
Here's what I think. Randy, you watch a fair amount of stuff. Watch 20 minutes and see what you think at some point.
All right, okay.
It's on my Vudu. You can watch it.
All right.
It is a movie that I could only describe in some ways as... meditative and dreamlike.
Yeah. I would bore the hell out of my wife. She was like, what the hell is this? This is not at all what I thought it was going to be.
But in some ways, even though it is dreamlike, it is also straightforward. We have Sir Gawain.
Yep.
A knight who has not yet proved himself, really, in this story.
He's kind of a...
he's a ne'er-do-well.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's not, like, knightish at all.
They're like, the king is calling everybody to the round table, and he's like, oh, I'm off at the brothel.
I
can't go.
Is this guy Richie's?
No, definitely not.
And when he does attend the court, King Arthur is there, and his voice, Nick, his voice was so weird to me. He sounds like an old man whose frailty is so extreme that he's like he seems like he could drop dead any minute.
That actor is Sean Harris, who you will know. I don't know if you remember, but the villain of the Mission Impossible movies.
Right, right.
Yeah, and he definitely does have kind of this voice that he can kind of modulate a little bit. Atypical.
It was fascinating to listen to, but very strange. You know, you usually think like King Arthur is either going to be like some booming deep voice or like an elder wise man, maybe. And this was very different. And this is ultimately a story about Sir Gawain and whether he can prove himself after an encounter with a seemingly mystical being called the Green Knight, who comes to like the court of King Arthur with a challenge that was kind of it's a concept that shows up in, I guess, a fair number of medieval stories and legends of the time, where he challenges Gawain to strike a blow on him, and like he gets his head chopped off. And then he's like, now I get to do the same to you, he says, after picking up his own head and putting it back on. He's clearly some sort of magical being. And it's, I think, what does he have, like a year, Nick? He's like, you have a year my home, my kingdom, basically, and then receive the same in turn.
Now, Dave, you know the Arthurian mythos a little bit, right? Is this
a little bit.
The Green Knight thing is from Arthurian mythos. Well, what is this?
It is a true... It's a poem from, like, the 14th century or...
So how close does this skew to the original story? Is it like a...
Surprisingly close.
Okay.
Now, what's kind of interesting about this, and I guess this is kind of giving something away, is that in the original legend, Randy, like, he kind of has ups and downs of, like, kind of being honorable.
Okay.
He'll accomplish something brave, and then he'll do something a little cowardly. Like, there's an implication of, like, he stays at the court of some other king and may kind of sleep with his wife. or at least take a kiss from her. That's how it was described in, like, the poem. And that does occur in this, only it's not like a series of ups and downs. It is more like a consistent string of failures, culminating in a pretty fascinating, and one thing I don't quite want to say, a fairly fascinating ending.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I feel like, thematically, it's an A24 movie. You know, these guys made Hereditary.
And has a cast that is
Midsummer.
Built on, like, the A24, because it's got, like Sean Harris, but also Joel Edgerton, and Alicia Vikander,
yep.
And Barry Keoghan, or Kagan.
I don't know who any of those people are. Actually, I know who Alicia Vikander is.
I mean, Joel Edgerton's been in a bunch. He plays the Lord in this, of the castle.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Just a quick aside, the Green Knight looks amazing.
Yeah.
He looks like some sort of pagan god made out of, like, writhing tree limbs and stuff
that. And I don't know if we said, but Dev Patel plays Sir Gawain.
Yeah.
And he does a really good version of kind of...
Loser knight.
Yeah, a loser knight.
I feel like thematically, at least to me, this was a kind of story as adapted by A24 that wasn't about, like, a tarnished knight, like a knight who had, like, some flaws, but a truly tarnished knight, and a question of whether he has any possibility of redeeming himself.
Yeah, I mean, it all kind of boiled down to one scene with, like, him and King Arthur, and Arthur was like, tell me a story that tells me something about you.
Yeah.
And Sir Gawain was like, I don't have any stories.
Yeah.
And I think it's his desire for those stories, and then you see him kind of fail through his trials and tribulations.
And there's interesting ways he fails. Like, among other things, like, this is a darker movie. At one point, they're traveling across what's, like, the battlefield of, like, one of Arthur's kind of crusades or enterprises.
Yeah.
And the peasants are there scavenging, and there's a guy who comes begging to Gawain for help or any sort of...
Or no, he's actually, like, just looting off the bodies, and he tells Sir Gawain a shortcut to...
Because
he thinks he knows where the Green Knight is.
Right.
And he's like, you should... And, like, do I get anything for telling you this?
And Gawain in general is like, no, in most of these cases. And that comes back to bite him pretty hard on that one.
It does.
It is kind of slow and somber, but it's also filled with these very vibrantly weird colors. Yeah, I don't know quite how to describe
them. The filming is fantastic. I think it was shot like with castle, like on location at like a couple of castles. I think in Ireland, if I'm not mistaken. I'm probably wrong about that. But the cinematography is beautiful.
There's a fox in it that speaks.
Yep.
There are giants at one point. It is not an action movie in any way, shape, or form.
No.
But it's one that I would recommend. Like, if you like Arthurian lore at all, I think it's worth a look. It does feel like a deconstructionist type version, you know, a little bit like the kind of way Alan Moore sometimes looked at things.
Yeah.
And I use that as a compliment, not a negative thing towards it.
I really enjoyed it.
I did too.
And I apparently would not.
Or you might.
Or maybe I will. What if I watch it and you're all shocked?
I'll be like, Nick, Randy Dunce after all.
I think you're going to get 20 minutes into it and be bored.
Well, keep in mind, I am adult.
Well, you don't like Lord of the Rings, and that's kind of like...
I like Lord of the Rings okay.
Imagine if Lord of the Rings was all just the traveling scenes.
Oh, no.
No, that's actually not true. But
it's close.
But it's close. Do we got anything else today?
Yeah, TV stuff, which I think is all stuff that Nick and I have watched. So, Dave, you can just zone out.
Cool. I'll just be chilling.
Or
just
ask questions.
Just sit there and think about Green Knight. So first up is Ghosts, which is a new CBS show that is based on an old British show.
Yep.
In which...
Rose McIver
from iZombie, and the guy whose name I cannot remember.
But he was just in Free Guy.
He was in Free Guy. He's really funny. They are a married couple. Her like great grandmother or something dies.
Yeah, and kind of leaves this to her.
This old house in like the country to her. And
so they make the transition from living in like
New York, Brooklyn. And she wants to go up there and turn into a bed and breakfast.
Right.
He is not so sure about it. But what we can see as the audience is that there are a bunch of ghosts who live here.
Correct.
From a variety of eras. Like, they all died on this property. So there's a Viking.
Yep.
There's a Native American. There is a very obviously gay Colonial War soldier.
Yep.
There is a sort of prim and proper Victorian woman. There is a 80s douche bro.
The Victorian woman is like a descendant of the person of this house. She owned this house.
And then there's a hippie who was killed at a music festival by a bear. I believe that's all the ghosts, right? And then there's the 80s era Boy Scout leader who has an arrow through his neck because that's how he got killed.
Yep. Because they had a Boy Scout camp at this place.
Girl Scout.
Or Girl Scout camp.
Yes,
yeah.
he was killed by an arrow through the neck.
Yeah.
So he still has the arrow in the neck. And these ghosts all coexist here, and they live in this place, and they do not want them coming here, so they try to haunt them unsuccessfully.
Yes.
And then she has a fall and almost dies. And
hits
as a result,
her head.
Now she can see the ghosts. And so now she's talking to them and they're talking to her. Her fiancé at first doesn't believe her, but then does, although he still can't see them.
Well, don't forget that the ghosts in the basement.
Yes, there are all the people who died of cholera in the basement, and they're like zombie ghosts.
And that's how he learns to trust her, because they fix the...
They prevent the boiler from exploding.
Exactly.
So yeah, so basically it's all these ghosts, and they're trying to, and they discover the Native American and the Viking in the latest episode. They've discovered TV and reality TV.
Yes.
And they're watching a show called It's Getting Hot in Here, about a bunch of sexy singles who are in parkas, and as the show goes on, they wear less and less clothes.
As they raise the temperature.
As they raise the temperature in the house.
It's one of those shows that I think in concept sounds a little cheesy and maybe...
It sounds very goofy.
And goofy and shouldn't really work.
Yeah.
But it's got a lot of, like, just good humor. The latest episode, I mean, it's outright, like, heartfelt.
It's really sweet. I was kind of surprised because I was thinking this is
kind of
goofy.
Can you liken it to any other show?
No.
No, actually, no. They make, like, weird references, like, New Heart and...
Yes, there's a whole runner about New Heart. There's a ghost. One of the guys is played by one of the characters from the fourth season of The Good Place. I couldn't place him at first, but then that's where he's at. And then Rose McIver, who I love.
Yeah, she's the big hook for me.
But the cast is all really good. They're all really funny.
It's one of those CBS shows that you should check out.
Yeah, it's worth a look. I was surprised how much I enjoyed it. And, like, yeah, the latest episode definitely sort of brought a little heart to it, though. Yeah. I was not expecting. We talked about the trailer for this one, but Inside Job on Netflix is an animated comedy from the guy who made Gravity Falls.
Yep. Which I never watched.
Which I watched some of and liked okay.
Yeah. This is about sort of the place where all the conspiracy theories you've heard have come from, and this is the people who actually rule the world.
The people who run the world, they have, like, super science.
Yes.
And also, I think, some magic. And Mothman is their HR guy,
yeah.
voiced by Ron Funches.
This is amazing.
And it is a woman who's just been sort of promoted to not the head of the organization, but like the director of this part of it.
Yeah, she is the daughter of
the previous director.
The previous director,
who is voiced by
Christian Slater.
Christian Slater. And the daughter is voiced by Lizzie Kaplan.
Yep.
And yeah, it is. And she's got a new sort of like brown nosy business guy who's like her co-leader.
Yeah, he's basically Fry from Futurama in a lot of ways. But
if Fry was a frat bro.
If Fry was a frat bro. She doesn't understand social awareness at all.
Nope.
She can't deal with people.
Yep.
And yet she is dying to run the world.
Yeah. there's also her, I forget who her boss is, the guy who wants to be part of the like inner circle.
Yeah, the robed ones or...
And then, you know, at some point we discover that the Illuminati is also real and they're a rival organization.
Yep.
There are lizards from the Hollow Earth. It's a fun, wacky show.
I will say there is an episode that features Oprah Winfrey.
There is, yes, there is.
And it's pretty
There's also
hilarious.
One that's like an 80s riff where they go to a town where everybody's convinced it's the 80s the whole time. And there's every possible riff from Back to the Future to Weird Science, all that is riff.
I think I weirdly like it, and I know this is going to sound crazy, but I like it a little bit more than Rick and Morty because of the complete ensemble of characters.
It does feel like a Rick and Morty riff, but I think because of the pure insanity of Rick and Morty, I like it better.
Yeah. This is insane, but
it's not quite as ambitious as Rick and Morty sometimes is.
It's true. This does have a giant robot bear that...
It does have a giant robot bear.
That likes to give you hugs.
It also has a robotic president who failed to take over the entire world, and they keep in a jar.
And now just likes to watch Friends.
Now just likes to watch Friends. So it is very weird. It's funny.
It's all on Netflix.
Yeah.
So the first season is out completely.
The same week that dropped, they put out a show called Maya and the Three.
Oh, yeah.
Which is from the guy who did Book of Life.
Book of Life, yes.
And it's got that same sort of stylized animation. It's actually probably looks better than Book of Life, I think.
Book of Life looked great.
It did. I really love Book of Life. This actually, I think, is... So this is about sort of Aztec gods kind of thing. The lead is Maya, is a girl who is the daughter of this, like, warrior tribe. And her brothers die in battle against the god of death. And she finds out that her mother is actually the goddess of death. And that her father cheated on her mother. And
okay.
So, and then she basically, there's this prophecy that she has to go and defeat the god of death. And so she finds these other warriors, a barbarian type guy, an archer who is like in love with the forest and creatures, and that is voiced by Diaz from Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And a sort of a magician who is not fully in control of his powers.
Hmm.
But it's a fun sort of like, that ensemble then goes into the other world and they're attacked by various other gods because the god of death is like the lord of these gods and they're all serving him, trying to keep her away. It's a very fun sort of adventure-y, I would say, if you like, say, Raya and Last Dragon and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It's got that vibe and it has a sort of Spanish history vibe to it that I think is unique. But if you like Book of Life, this is not a musical. But it's very similar to that kind of thing. I would definitely give it a look.
No, it's got a great
cast.
Where
is it running?
This is on Netflix.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's Zoe Saldana.
Zoe Saldana's the lead.
Diego Luna.
Yep.
Stephanie Beatriz is from Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Right.
Yeah. I know. That's...
It's a good voice cast.
Queen Latifah?
It's really good. I would highly recommend it.
Nice.
I think that's everything we got this week. And we'll be back next week with more and hopefully with the rest of our comics.
Yep, that'd be nice.
And until that time,
yo show.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.